Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay and the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-hostess Misty Hall and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. Also this evening, if you have any questions for our extra special wonderful guest, get a pencil ready and I'll give you the phone number in case you'd like to call in after a while and have any questions. So the phone number will be area code 646-716-4893. I'll repeat that again, area code 646-716-4893. Before we start speaking with our very special guest for tonight, I just want to remind people that next Sunday night we will not be on the air because I'll be on my vacation, and that's my once-a-year vacation for a week, so I'll be missing you. But Misty and I will be back here the following week. Also, for those people who are still interested in coming to my healing weekend in Philadelphia at the end of September, we still have a few seats left, so you still have time if you would like to get in on the healing weekend. And I just wanted to tonight welcome back a guest who I feel I really know up front and personally now, and it's Carrie Blakely, who's the author of the book I Can't Think Straight, A Memoir of Mixed Up Love. So welcome to our show, Carrie. Thank you so much for coming back.
Thanks for having me again.
Well, it's a pleasure, especially, like I say, we've been communicating a little bit in the last few months, and you were gracious enough to be willing to do the show. So I felt this time, you were on here last time when your book came out and you were a real big splash all over, and I thought, you know what, I have to read this book because everybody I hear, you know, all of our members who bought it after you were on told me what a great book it was. So I said before Carrie gets here, I really do have to read this book. And I told Carrie the truth, you know, I've been absorbed in Carrie Blakely all weekend. And you know, the book is not really what I expected. I mean, I think you were really upfront, brutally honest, and I had a lot of laughs. You said a lot of profound things in here, but I also, most importantly, was able to feel your hurt during those early days of discovery. And I think that's a period of time that our women have the most difficulty with, you know, in those first immediate moments, days, weeks, and months. And this is pretty much like a diary of, you know, all those days that you went through. So could you tell people a little bit first about, you know, the story?
Well, I was with a guy for 10 years, almost 11 years, and we were engaged. And, yeah, it was a long engagement, but these things happen.
And you were living together. You bought a place together,
yes,
right?
Yeah, we were living together. We'd been living together, maybe 6 or 7 months after meeting each other. Maybe it was a year, I can't quite remember, but it wasn't that long into the relationship that we moved in together. And it was probably a year after that that he asked me to marry him, and so we just had this really long engagement. I felt married, we had all of our legal stuff done, and I guess I just didn't need that big wedding or whatever, but we finally decided that we were going to do that. And he had actually always been the one who had sort of pressed, you know, to get married. And so finally I was like, yeah, you know, why not? We should do this. And it was probably about 2 weeks later that he just sat me down one night and said he was questioning his sexuality. And I was just completely shocked and blown away. I didn't know what he was talking about. I thought maybe he was just making some sort of joke or something. And then he started crying hysterically. So at that point, I knew that this was serious. And then I don't know how much you want me to go into the book, but so the next day, he went to work, and I just felt like I needed to know a bit more about what was going on, and I went into his side of our computer, which I'd never done before, even though I'd always had his password, and that's when I discovered basically he'd been living a double life. As a gay man, he'd been sexually active, he'd been on Craigslist, he'd been, you know, there was basically having an affair with one man while simultaneously picking up strangers online. So that's sort of when the real seriousness of it came crashing down on me. So the book pretty much starts right off the bat with that night, starting with him telling me that.
And, of course, as our women who will listen to the show can really relate to the devastation of being with someone for 10 years of your life who you think is your best friend, you know, who you've done everything with, who your family accepts, who all your friends accept as a ongoing wonderful couple, and then all of a sudden, boom, it's like your life is totally torn apart.
I think that's the thing that was the hardest for me to struggle with out of anything, because we had what I think anyone would consider a healthy, good relationship. So it wasn't a relationship where I could look back and say, well, there was this red flag and that red flag, and, you know, he was never home, and, you know, there were weird things going on. Like, there was none of that. So when that happens, there's a real shift in your perception that goes on when you realize that people can hide things from you so well, while, you know, being emotionally available, while being a loving person. You know, at the same time this was going on, I had a niece who was dying of cancer, and he was very there for me. And I had a grandmother who died of cancer, and he was very there for me. And his father was dying, and I was there for him. So we were doing all of that stuff that loving couples do, while he was simultaneously picking up strange men and going to their apartments. And, you know, possibly these men could have been dangerous. I mean, anything could have happened, putting himself at risk, putting me at risk. So it was the dual nature of him that really blew me away, I think, more than, you know, finding out that he had feelings for men. It was all of this other stuff going on that I just found so hard to process.
And Carrie, I think maybe the fact that what I can really appreciate about this story, and that you can reassure other women, so often when people find out that you have a gay husband, or in your case, you know, a gay fiance, or some long-term relationship with a man who's gay, and you're totally blindsided by it, that there was no hints, no clues, although in retrospect you may have seen a few, but at that immediate moment, and we really do believe that if there is a problem, that's going to be the last thing that's the problem in the marriage or the relationship. But the fear that people think that, you
your
know,
mind
well,
doesn't generally tend to skip to gay, even if there are issues. So,
isn't that true? Because, you know, when people say to women, like, how couldn't you see it? How couldn't you know?
Well, I think, you know, there's two things going on when people say that. And the first thing, it took me a long time to figure this out, but what people are really asking, and they don't know how to ask it, is, weren't you having sex? And they don't realize that a man who is primarily attracted to men can still have regular sex with women. And that does sound strange. Like, why would they be able to do that? Hey, I don't know. Ask them. But they can. So I think that's the first thing.
And some of them can, and those are the ones that, you know, get into relationships.
Yeah, and I think you were the one, Bonnie, who first kind of pointed out to me that it's very easy to do in the 20s, and, you know, some people manage to do it through the 30s, but it gets more and more difficult as they get older. And he and I did get together in our mid-20s, and, you know, men have a lot of testosterone, and, you know, and it's great to, you know, there are gay men out there who say, I was born gay, and I knew I was gay from the time I was a kid, and I can't stand even the thought of being with a woman, and that's great. And then there are men who aren't so sure. So,
and the ones who aren't so sure are trying not to be, because...
Or trying not to be, but if they can perform with a woman, then they're probably confused too, honestly.
Exactly. And that's why I said, I really wish there was a way that they were all born with it.
They're probably,
you know,
like, wait a second, I think about guys, but I have no problem getting it up with my girlfriend, and maybe they think of both, and who knows. So so I think that's the first thing people are asking. And then the second thing is what people do, which is a defense mechanism, which they do with a lot of tragedies, which is, what did that person do to bring it on themselves? And what signs was that person missing that I clearly wouldn't miss because I'm not stupid? And what this does is protect you in your own mind from anything bad happening to you. And I'm sure, believe me, Bonnie, before this happened to me, I would have thought the same thing. This girl was obviously clueless. I mean, I remember going to Brokeback Mountain with my fiance, which was actually in the book, and laughing at these women on the screen and being like, well, how can they be so silly? How can they not know? And why would you know? Because, you know, if you don't have that frame of reference, I mean, why would your brain jump to gay unless, you know, unless somebody's clearly acting gay? And, you know, can you pretend to be a man for me or something like that? Why would you, you know, we're having sex, we're having a relationship, things are good. Why would you think your man's gay? So, yeah, so no, I mean, obviously it's all the women out there who are shocked and who think that they should have known. I mean, obviously it's just you know, wrong and just unnecessary angst that you're putting on yourself.
Right, but in retrospect, like I say, you were young, and I think back, you know, in your 20s,
I wasn't that young,
Bonnie.
I was 26 when he and I got together.
Exactly.
That's not that young.
No, that was young, because once again, in your 20s, there's a lot of things you really don't know or understand. And
no, you don't.
I know,
I mean,
I didn't
it wasn't as young as some,
26.
You know, a high school, you know, romance or something like that. I mean, I was in my 20s, so was he, and but go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's okay. I just feel that a lot of times that there, I mean, in retrospect now, I'm looking back, that maybe you could realize that it's really not a normal relationship for somebody in their 20s, you know, late 20s, early 30s, not to have sex.
Oh, I agree, but we were having it. So.
But not very much.
No, we had a normal sex life. We had sex frequently, you know, in the beginning, and towards the middle, it kind of, you know, you go a few more weeks without it, and then by the time it's 10 years in, you're going a month or two, sometimes not, sometimes it would be every week. Then I had a couple tragedies in the family, and then, you know, we went like, there was one time where we went 8 months. But I honestly know heterosexual couples, and I'm presuming they're heterosexual, who knows, but who have it less, who have it much less than I had it. I think that, you know, in retrospect, looking back, there's no way I could have, I mean, I'm a blogger, and I read every day and write every day about people and their dwindling sex lives, every day. And you can look at any TV show. There's books dedicated to spicing up your sex life. I mean, there's no way that I could have gone from, gee, we're 10 years in and the sex life has dwindled, to he must be gay. I mean, if that's the case, then every man in this country must be gay, and every woman. I don't know, because a sex life does naturally dwindle after a while. I think maybe what I would have looked at a little more closely is, I think any time a sex life dwindles significantly, there's maybe something going on. And it may not be that the person's gay, but there's something going on. And because the rest of our relationship was for 10 years in, I mean, we had a really good relationship. We got along really well. We spent a lot of time together. So why wasn't a couple who were as close as we were emotionally not having more sex?
Exactly.
So that might be something I
would have
looked at. But I just thought it was a normal, natural thing that occurred with couples. And then the other thing that I've learned that I wouldn't have known then, that I think happens with couples, is that it's, and I don't want to generalize, but it seems to be the woman who kind of loses interest after she has kids and whatever, whereas the guy kind of always wants it. Or not all the time, I mean. But so in our relationship, it was always me who felt like we weren't having enough sex. So maybe that was another clue. Like, here's a guy who doesn't, you know what I mean? Like,
yes, exactly.
So
that's
for
what
the woman,
I tell all women. You know, straight men want sex. It's that simple. And
but, you know, it started off fine, just like most relationships. So, you know, it was hard to see it I think if it had happened a couple months in, it would have triggered a lot of alarm bells in me, but that's not the way it happened. So
do you think that there were any other, not necessarily gay things, but hints that something was off, like an emotional distancing sometimes?
No, there was no emotional distancing. He was always a very sweet, nice person who was very there for me in all ways. The only thing I can say is that, and I think maybe possibly I'm a little not usual in that respect, but I've spoken to a lot of straight wives who say the same, that they were their husbands didn't show any signs of being distant. The only other thing, and I wrote this in my book, and again, I don't want to frighten people whose husbands, women whose husbands have suddenly grown beards, but about a year before he came out, he grew a beard, and he had had beards on and off during our relationship. Like when I first met him, he had one. But then he grew one, and I never thought he looked great with a beard, and it was scratchy for me. And I repeatedly sort of asked him gently if he would shave it, and he wouldn't.
Uh-huh.
And he seemed kind of attached to this beard. But, does that say gay? No, but in retrospect, he was more concerned about his beard than what I liked. So that was a little strange. But those were really, the only two things. There was, I always knew where he was. I mean, we were together every night after work. And, I knew all his friends. And the only thing I can say, I wasn't a snooper. I never spied on him. I never checked his text messages or his computer or his email or any of that stuff. I mean, I certainly would have caught on to things a lot earlier if I'd done that.
And Carrie, could you make a point? You just made a point, so maybe you could just expand that a little bit. A lot of our women say the same thing. We were always together. I always knew where he was. How could he?
Well, I mean, you can't put it, 24/7 on something. So
exactly. I always tell
believe
women,
me, people will get in things
minute,
in 5 minutes.
Right?
You know.
Yeah, they go into a bathroom and it's over in 30
seconds. Yeah,
yeah.
It's not quite the same, I think, as having an affair with a woman, I think. Uh-oh. I don't know, because I haven't experienced that, but I'm sort of guessing maybe they spend more time with a woman than a man. I really don't know, but...
No, but I'm saying for those men who just want to have that moment of sex, it only takes a moment. And I have men who tell me they've done it when they're going out to dinner with their wives. They tell their wives,
he was doing it after work. I mean, we would meet after work, and yet he somehow managed in the 20 minutes it took him to get from his office to where I was, he was meeting a guy. It's crazy. But
exactly. And I think that we're just so uninformed about this kind of stuff that, why would we even think in this direction? Because we're not from this type of world. We're not
right,
that familiar.
And that's
we may
the
have
thing.
Gay
I
friends.
Mean, how can you know? I mean, there's really, unless you are having the person followed, at some point you have to trust the person you're with. And, I just don't know. I've spoken to too many women who are just completely blown away and shocked. And really, I mean, occasionally a woman tells me that, she and the guy had a discussion early on that, he thought maybe he was bisexual. But on the whole, most of the women, had absolutely no clue and no signs. So,
Well, most importantly in this book, other than so well how you articulated the feelings and the emotions, what I tell our women, and I hope you're not offended in any way, but, gay husband recovery and your situation, I consider you the same. You're with a man for 10 years. That's marriage. But it takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. But some women react in a way to, similarly to the way that you did. All of a sudden now,
very common.
Whole life is turned over.
I thought I was being so unique by the way I handled things, but apparently it's the template reaction. I had no idea.
Not everybody,
until I started talking to other
women
people.
In their 30s, some of them. But, I certainly can understand. I've worked with a lot of women who went in that direction. In other words, they had to just reassure themselves that they're still desirable, they're still a woman. Some women, they just go out and they start sleeping with guys. And I always tell women, you can practice, but don't look for these emotional entanglements for at least a year until after, your marriage is over. And
I think
really
the thing
seem
is
to take
like,
full advantage of that.
I didn't realize that's what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I was in some sort of post-traumatic stress disorder state, which I really only realized, you know, looking back, because everything I was doing was so out of character for me. But I didn't realize that by going out and immediately trying to hook up with men that what I was doing was reassuring myself sexually. It really was something that I had buried. And I thought, I'm just having fun. That's what I'm doing. I'm getting mine now. He got his. Why shouldn't I get mine?
Mm-hmm.
And it was all this defensive stuff that I didn't recognize as being a cry for help until, you know, years later.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I can't say I would have done it any differently because I had no choice. I was so compelled in that direction that sitting home and doing yoga and meditation and watching Oprah was just not on my radar at all. And, you know, and I've spoken to so many straight wives who immediately run out for, you know, for gratification from, you know, yeah, you're looking for that. You're looking for that guy. You know, the thing that really just, and I think I say this in my book, the first time I sort of started to hook up with a guy, I just the way he looked at me was so different
mm-hmm.
from what
just
my
to have
fiance
a straight
had
man
been looking.
Who wants you.
Yeah, like looking at me like
totally
a kid looking
thing.
At a lollipop. You know, just it was a completely different thing, and I think that's when I first realized, wow, okay, this is what I'm dealing with. This is what men look at you like when they want you sexually.
mm-hmm. And you took full advantage of that.
And they
that
took full advantage of it, too. You know, I mean, you know, yes and no. I mean, numbers-wise, it wasn't, there certainly was. I don't want to get people's hopes up too much that I, you know, sleep with 100 guys. I don't. There's only a few, but and then there's a whole thing that goes on in your head where you think to yourself, well, this is a way of detaching yourself emotionally. So
mm-hmm.
and what that's doing is just trying to guarantee a way that you're not going to get hurt. So yeah, I don't want to be lonely. So I'm going to be with a guy, but I'm not going to get attached, and that way I can't get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, our biology is not quite set up that way, or at least mine isn't. And
no,
most
you brought
women,
that up
I
as
think
an
it's...
excellent point, because women are not men.
No.
And even though
I know a few who are, but...
but, you know, and even if you have good sex, but we're still not men. We're,
no,
you know, we
and
still
I,
have
know,
that
you know,
type of
and
emotional
I don't even
attachment.
Think... I don't even think the men were men. I mean, some of the men I was with, you know, especially one of them, you know, I think he was trying to do the same thing, and he couldn't quite pull it off either. I mean, at the end of the day, we're human beings, and as much as we may not want emotional entanglement, it's hard to be with somebody. You know, it's one thing to have a one-night stand and never see someone again. It's another thing to see them 3-4 times a week, talk on the phone, email, you know, exchange hopes and dreams, and then be like, later, see ya.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're not, you know, human beings aren't cut out for that, really. So, I mean, some people are, but they're not normal. So, most people want love, and they want affection, and, you know, they want to feel valued and all that, so.
Exactly. So, let me ask you this question. I don't know if you've thought about this before, but I was reading in here, and we've done some surveys with our own women on this. I was reading about your family life. And you had mentioned that there was some abuse in growing up. Am I correct? I don't want to miss.
Yeah, my stepfather abused my mother. I was personally not abused, but that's still, you know, witnessing it is, I'm
mm-hmm,
sure,
domestic
just bad,
violence
so,
and being
yeah,
in the mix
yeah.
with it.
Yeah.
So when we, you know, talk honestly, you know, my group, and we did a survey on how many women came from that background, it was amazing to me how many actually did come from backgrounds where there was domestic violence in the home, not necessarily towards the children, you know, but a lot towards their mothers and
right.
violence and all kinds of horrible things. And sometimes they were just looking, you know, for something that was so opposite of what they were
oh,
seeing.
Oh, yeah,
in their own
definitely.
Home.
Definitely. I mean, when I drill down deep as to what I'm attracted to are men who are completely the opposite of my stepfather, which
mm-hmm.
in a way is good. Like, I'm on the right track, right? You don't want a guy who's, like, the abuser, and a lot of women get into that cycle, unfortunately. But I brought it so far to the extreme to basically want a guy who wasn't going to be aggressive with me, which is great. And we're taught that. We're like, hey, girls, you know, the guy should want to wait for you, and he should feel you're valuable, and he shouldn't, you know, he should want to. I can see why women fall for gay men. They actually want to listen to you, and, you know, they're not all over you on the first date, and you actually do feel valued. And I felt that my entire relationship. And like I say, I would not give up my relationship because it was a good one. It was 10 years of being with a good person who valued me and treated me like a good human being. But, yeah, absolutely, I went for – I like the guys who aren't aggressive and who, you know, let me – I sort of take over the relationship, and the sexual stuff goes at my pace. Which is so then I ricocheted after I found out my fiance was gay. I ricocheted to the opposite and went for the bad boys because I was like, well, the nice guy didn't work out, so now I'm going to go for the jerk. You know, like I just couldn't go in the middle. Like it was extremes on all ends, you know.
Exactly. And that's what's so difficult is finding something in the middle.
Yeah. I mean, I will never again be with a guy who's so-so about sex, who just is kind of like, eh, you know, if it happens, it happens. Great, honey. No, I want a guy who values it and prioritizes it, you know.
Right. And
but it can't be the whole, you know, enchilada either.
Well, like, for instance, you know, I made a little note here in the book. And, you know, I felt really bad when I was reading a lot of this. My heart is just with yours, aching for you, to be honest with you.
Aww.
But, you know, you're talking about James in the book.
Right.
And about how, basically, you know, he wasn't all that, you know, it wasn't like really, he was out for himself. He wasn't looking to make you happy. You know, his needs were number one.
Right.
And I thought to myself, this is like so horrible. You know, that it's everything that I'm totally, like, against, you know, that a man should be able to get away with that.
Right.
And just please himself and not have it. I mean, it shows me what a lack of a man that he is, you know, that he's willing. When he says here in the book, and you have this in chapter 44, it says, "Women are made differently from men," I calmly explained. "A guy can give himself an orgasm just by having sex. A woman is relying on a man to do what she likes." And he says, "A lot of women don't care about that," he answers. So, and you said maybe that's why none of your relationships have lasted very long. But, you know, that really got to me because, you know, I think many of us go through that. And with our gay husbands, when they, you know, when you say, well, you know, this is what women need, and when you finally get the courage to say that, and they say, well, I never had a problem with any women before. They didn't need that. You know, why are you the one who needs it? You know, making you feel sexually inadequate from at every point.
I didn't have that problem at all with my gay ex. He was very considerate in the bedroom and in all ways of life. He was just a considerate, caring person. So we never had those issues. It was infrequent. And it, I mean, as I said, it got more infrequent, but I didn't have any of these, you know, these blaming things that I hear that a lot of the straight wives have, where it's, oh, you know, if he and I weren't having sex, he would push it on me as, well, you could initiate, but it would never be like, well, you gained weight, or, well, you know, I'm stressed out from work. Like or you're pressuring me. Like, there was never that. I mean, he was just such a nice guy. Like, I mean, he never made me feel guilty. But at the other hand, he was almost more insidious because he wasn't making me feel wanted either. So it's kind of like, okay, well then, if there's no issues, what's the problem? You know.
And then and then did you internalize that at all?
Not that I'm aware of, but I mean, obviously I was raring to go when I finally got out of the relationship. I was raring to go sexually. I wasn't raring to go emotionally. Emotionally, I was pulverized and left, you know, my molecules, you know, scattered all over the city. But, you know, sexually I was extremely ready to feel wanted again, because I felt like I hadn't for so long. And also I've read since all this happened, I've read that stress can trigger your hormones and make you horny. So that sometimes I wonder if that's what was going on. There was a lot of sex going on, I read, right after 9/11, and I remember thinking, that's strange. Why would people want to have sex, you know, when there's a terrorist attack? But
well, they say that's really true. Like, you know, in countries where they're under threat of war, you know, there's a lot of sex going on because you always feel like this could be your last day.
And they're still having children, right? You would think they wouldn't want to bring children into that situation, but they're obviously having sex. So, yeah, you know, I think there was a lot of stuff going on as to why this was something that I felt compelled to do. But also, as you mentioned earlier, I was a late starter in life. I was a late bloomer. I didn't have my first real relationship until I was 26. I didn't lose my virginity until I was 24. So a lot of that stuff that a lot of women would have gotten out of the way in their teens or their early 20s, I had not. So I kind of sowed my wild oats in my 30s.
No, I think 30s is a good time to sow them.
Oh, absolutely. That's
quite
when
frankly.
I recommend anyone do it, because you know, you do know what you want. So
I think that it's important for women to feel sexually, you know, sexually wanted, sexually needed. I think that's what makes you feel as part of a woman. Otherwise, your sexuality is just ripped away from you. But it's a matter of finding balance of what you really need to go along with that as far as an emotional relationship. And I know in the beginning you were trying to be like a man. I just want to screw with guys, but, you know, no emotions, no attachment. Look what the attachment brought me. Look what, you know, having a relationship did for me.
Exactly. It pained me so much to be so emotionally attached to somebody that I was definitely determined. You know, and there's been a lot of movies in the past couple of years, and I think there's a show on HBO now called Girls where a lot of that is going on, and I think there's a difference between, you know, one of the critics said that, you know, my book wasn't about empowered sex, and she seemed offended that I wasn't having empowered sex. And, you know, Samantha from Sex and the City is a fictional character. If that's her view of empowered sex, that's fictional, you know, and I felt that it was important for me to lay bare everything that I was feeling, and when I was feeling rejected to admit that, and when I was feeling sad to admit that, and not to act like I was something that I wasn't. So if that made me come across as pathetic sometimes, I was fine with that. That was on purpose. I'm not stupid.
And you probably
felt that way
at times, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's important when you're writing a memoir to be honest, and
I know why it's important, Carrie, because other women who are doing it need to be able to make that connection with somebody else. And that's why this book is so beautifully written that, you know, I was telling some of my women on the chat, well, who was ever on my chat tonight, that they must get this book because so many of them are going through that same emotional turmoil that you went through. And yet yours is the first book, and I've read a lot of other books on this subject, you know, over the years, that really articulates those exact feelings that women go through. I don't know any other book that quite does it like this.
I mean, you were just
so beautifully able to put that down with humor. I mean, you know, I was showing my boyfriend today, in fact, I was reading, you know, I have so many things marked off by you. I said, you got to hear this, you got to hear this, you got to hear this. I mean, I think he knows you already, too. He spent a lot of the time on the weekend with you, too, Carrie. But
yeah.
I was telling him about the story with the tailor, and I just thought that was so funny where, you know, you have in here that your boyfriend went to get his suit. You know, you said to your boyfriend, when's the first time that you had these feelings? And he's telling you about this old, you know, tailor he went to.
Yeah.
And that he was shortening his pants.
An 80-year-old tailor.
Yeah.
You know, you would think your man would, you know, the first time I felt the flutterings of desire for another man was when I was watching, you know, River Run Through It and saw Brad Pitt with his shirt off.
Exactly.
No. It was the 80-year-old tailor he went to get his pants shortened. So, you know, there was so much about the coming out process for him and me that was just comical. I mean, I just had to include
it. He got aroused by the 80-year-old tailor who was, you know, moving up and down his pants. And you were so funny. You said, in other words, he had to go to the cleaners one day, and he goes to the cleaners one day, and he comes back gay.
Yeah, and I mean, that's
you just have all these things going through your mind, because that's how we are. You know, our minds are just floating with a million different thoughts because we can't comprehend this. You know, we just can't understand how this could possibly be when we're living with someone who we think we have a handle on everything for a beautiful relationship, and then this is dropped in our lap.
Yeah. And for some reason, it does lend itself to comedy. I mean, you know, Fran Drescher has a show. I've never seen it, but it is, you know, it is a situation comedy, and my book has a lot of humor in it, and anytime my agent talks to anyone in Hollywood about doing something with the book, it's always, you know, going to be a comedy. And, you know, I'm like, a comedy? Gosh, it's so sad in so many ways. But for some reason, it lends itself to comedy in a way that a man coming home and saying, I have a, you know, fallen in love with another woman doesn't have. I'm not sure why it lends itself to that, but, you know, for me, it was laugh or cry sometimes. So sometimes I would just choose to, you know, just laugh if I could.
Right, but I don't want to mislead people into thinking that this is a comedy. You're comical.
No, it's a,
you're writing,
what would you call
comical.
Comic tragedy?
Yeah, comic tragedy. But you certainly were able to express those feelings of the depth of the greatest pain in the world and, you know, just, you know, wanting to go and throw up or getting drunk or, you know, wiping out the memories or...
Yeah. Just wiping out.
It was a lot
of
drinking that first year, right?
Yes, and I'm not a big drinker either. The funny thing is, I think it comes across more like I become this huge alcoholic than I really did, because I'm pretty small. So for me to go out and have three drinks, I could be raging drunk at the end of the night. So it kind of, I think, you know, it's not like I hit the scotch bottle. I mean, for me, to go out and get drunk would basically be three or four glasses of wine. But, I did, you know, I did all the basic numbing stuff. I mean, other than turn to hard drugs or whatever, I did the alcohol, I did the cigarettes, which I don't smoke anymore. You know, I hardly drink anymore. I mean, all of it. I did the sex. I did, you know, I think for a while I was on Paxil, for a while I was on Xanax. You know, I don't take anything like that anymore. It was just all, and I never had up until that moment. It was just all the crutches that you need to get through such a shock to the system.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel, I mean, I know you had the greatest relationship with your ex-husband, and he was wonderful, and, you know, you mentioned that throughout the book. But how about on the other side of the coin? I mean, the feelings of betrayal, did you feel that?
Oh, my God,
I
hope that came across in the book. I mean...
Not so much in the beginning, but as the time went on, it seemed like you were picking up on a friendship with him.
You know, I think a lot of the, you know, I think when you first break up with someone that you really were in love with and really liked as a person, and I see this with a lot of the straight spouses, especially when they have kids, there's this real attempt to stay friends because, of course, you don't want to throw everything out the window. But the betrayal... at least for me, the betrayal just kept coming back. Wasn't something I could push aside. And I think any friend, whether they're your husband or just a friend, has to treat you well and value you and not lie to you. So eventually I felt like I could not be friends with a person who had done this to me. So, you know, we do not really, you know, we're not friends. I wouldn't call us friends. And
I think that's good, Carrie. You know, I think,
but, you know, I don't wish him any ill will, but I don't need to, you know, hang out with him. And,
and I think a lot of the women who remain friends, you have to understand it's much different when you have children. When you have to co-parent children together, then you need to have some semblance, if possible, of a relationship. You know,
right.
Because
I do see that sometimes
children.
It seems like that's a little bit of an excuse, though, to hold on to the person a little bit. You know, well, we have kids, so we have to spend every weekend together. It's like, no, you don't. I mean,
not like that.
I mean,
no,
and then they never start dating, and I don't know, but I didn't have to worry about that. So.
No, I didn't mean like go every weekend with your kids. I meant like once in a while. You know, if there's a
place you can go together. Yeah, you
do
have to keep up more of a relationship when you have kids. And I did have the option of choosing not, you know, when I decided not to. But even then, it was difficult. I would say me and my ex hung out all the time for like a year. I think he didn't know what to do either. I mean, we were just both so unmoored. I remember him calling me one night and being like, you know, can I come over and hang out? It's like, what? Like, I mean, he didn't know what to do with himself either, you know?
It's a hard adjustment for many men to make as well. But, you know, it's a matter that you have to be happy that you found out when you did, because you could have spent another 5 or 10 years in
a relationship,
right, before you would have found out.
Yeah, I think it must be much tougher for, you know, when you've spent 20, 30, 40 years, definitely.
I think so, and I feel bad for so many of our women because they've spent their whole adult life with a gay man, and they've never experienced straight sex. You know, they've never experienced a man wanting them and lusting for them. And
yeah.
I feel that, you know, to take that away from someone and to make them think they're crazy, because a lot of these guys do what I call gay lighting, like gaslighting.
Gay lighting.
I have my own terminology
that's
for gay
stuff.
That's
a good one, Bonnie.
Yeah, but
I like that.
Yeah, well, they do. They make you think you're crazy. Every time you confront them, they say, you must be out of your mind. You don't know what you're talking about. But I see gay porno on the screen. No, it's not gay porno on the screen.
No,
somebody
you're crazy. That's not a man, and that's not a man, and they're not having sex. What?
You know, they make you lose all sense of who you are. So
yeah.
The longer these relationships stay together, you know, the more debilitating it is for women. And that's why I'm such an advocate and proponent for women cutting their losses. I call it a mismarriage. They call it a mixed marriage. I call it a mismarriage. That means mistake in a marriage. People make a mistake.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean you have to keep living in it. You know, you get one chance at life. You got to fix these things.
I think one of the, you know, a lot of the women I've met, I think that the saddest ones for me were the ones where the guy was still in denial and still telling the woman that he wasn't, even though she'd found the gay porn, even though she'd found the, you know, ads online, and even though she'd found him in a car with a guy. I mean, she could do find any kind of evidence, and he would still be like, no, I'm not gay. And then she would see him go on to another relationship with another woman and still denying it. It's like, what?
I would say a lot of our women have, we have like a group of our women, a percentage of them have husbands who, I call them the gay straight men, straight gay men. I've identified them. These are men that no matter how many times they'll get divorced, they'll keep getting married again to prove that they're not gay. And they don't have emotional attachments to other men. They just have sexual attachments to having sex with a man.
Right.
But you divorce them, not a problem. They're going to find themselves another wife. And we have a lot of our women in that situation.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so sad, but I was taking part in a survey that was done in England a few years ago by gay men. And I had a lot of our women participate because they were getting all the gay men. And the question was asked, how many of you would actually ever tell your wife, you know, the truth? And 47% of several thousand men surveyed said there's no way in the world they will ever tell their wives the truth. And about another 25% of the men said they haven't told their wives the truth, but they would think about it. So as far as I'm concerned, that's over 60% of men who are living this lie whose wives don't know about it.
Well,
and
it
so
would definitely, you know,
I
can definitely see, you know, I mean, how it happens that women, you know, fall for gay men. And like I said, like, I mean, I was at a party the other night, and of course it's like only the gay men were well dressed and, you know, wanting to talk to us, and it's like all the straight guys looked terrible and didn't want to talk to us. And you know, and they have a lot of really positive qualities, but I would, you know, I'd definitely say to any woman when she's beginning to date a new guy, and she doesn't know a lot about him, that if he's not looking at you with sparkle in the eye and his, you know, and he's practically got, you know, smoke coming out of his nose because he wants you so badly, you know, just, and I'm not saying he has to try to rape you on the first date or whatever. I'm not saying he has to be like an ogre. But
no, but by
should,
the second date, he needs to be.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I mean, you can wait as long as you want to have sex with a guy. I feel like you can wait as long as you want, but if a guy should be showing interest. I mean, he should be showing interest, like, early on. And if he's doing a lot of, oh, you know, I'm so tired, and, oh, I'm stressed, and, oh, you know, you're putting pressure on me, get out. There's something wrong with this guy. And even if it's not gay, why would you want to be with a guy who doesn't want to have sex with you?
Right. I call it, I tell my women here, Carrie, I don't care they call it asexual, bisexual, you know, whatever sexual, transsexual,
whatever it is,
I don't care how you wrap it up and what it looks like. If you want a penis, you're gay. And that's how it is. You can call it whatever name you want. In the long run, it ends up being the same thing. They want a penis. It's not straight. And they could never, you know, what the problem is, these guys try to be straight and they try to act straight. Like they'll be homophobic, thinking that's the way straight men talk. You know, they're so clueless of what it is to be straight, and they're acting every day. And I just feel so bad for women, and 10 years of your life is a big chunk. Don't ever, you know, negate that 10 years.
Oh, no, I don't negate it, but I can't, there's nothing I can do about it now. So, I mean,
no, no, but
rather,
I'm saying that's a big hurt, 10 years of,
rather
you know,
than, you know, try to become too consumed with hatred about it, you know,
I try to look
at the positive, you know, so.
And that's good. You know, I always say to women, you know, you have to see what you learn from the relationship and move on and find something better for you. And
yeah,
some of our women
absolutely.
Are really moved on, and they've really done great. And
yeah.
How about you? How's your life right now at the moment?
It's good. It's good. Just taking it easy, writing a lot, and you know, it's good.
You know, you write a lot about celebrities. So what's your take on all the recent celebrities that are accused of being gay, like John Travolta?
Oh, well, I wouldn't want to get sued by saying anything about anyone. But, you know, obviously if this goes on in the so-called real world, it's going on in Hollywood too. I mean, Hollywood isn't, you know, immune from whatever's going on in the rest of the country. So,
it's happening everywhere with politicians,
it's happening,
right?
I'm sure there are gay men closeted and married to women in Hollywood. Probably even more so than anywhere else. So, but
yeah,
I wouldn't want to name anyone specifically because I really don't know their circumstances. So.
Okay, but maybe you had some hot gossip that you knew about that we haven't heard.
No, I'm sure everyone hears the same stuff about the same people.
No big secrets, just something fit for print.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. What's your best advice to women in the aftermath of a bad relationship like this, where you have a gay husband or gay boyfriend? What would you give, if you had to give your advice to them, what would you say?
My best advice, you know, the thing that it took me a while to learn and that I am still learning is to forgive yourself, because you're gonna go through a lot. You're not always gonna act fabulously. You're not always gonna act the way you want to act. You may despise this person. You may throw things at them or whatever, and you may feel like you missed signs or whatever it is. Be gentle with yourself because you've just been through a huge trauma, and forgive yourself for however you act and forgive yourself for however you feel, and just try to be gentle with yourself, because I think with breakups there's a lot of talk. People always have a lot of talk about you have to forgive the other person, and no one really ever says you have to forgive yourself.
Yes, well, we always say that first here, and we, you know, I have a different version of forgiveness. Not everybody agrees with me, and that's okay. We don't have to all agree. I really do believe forgiveness needs to be earned, that we don't have to give unconditional forgiveness. If somebody is really sorry that, you know, they've screwed up your whole life, then I can work with it from that point. But until they realize the damage that's been done, you know, for some of these women for years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, you know, made them feel inadequate for all those years, you know, because they were frustrated because, you know, they're living a life that's not theirs to live. And the wife becomes,
I don't even
know
what that means exactly. Like, what does it mean to forgive? I think people have this idea it means you're okay with what happens. And I will never be okay with what happens. And I will never look at it and go, that's okay that you did that. You were confused, or you were, you know, you didn't mean to hurt me or whatever. So I just take that word out when I think about my ex. Like, do I forgive him? I don't even answer that question. Like, I don't even know what that means.
Good.
But,
yeah.
You know, am I still focusing on the betrayal? Like, No, you can't sit there and focus on it every day, or he's not focusing on it. He's living his life, you know. I mean, all that anger is going to do is make my life miserable. So, you know, but
right.
It's a process. I mean, it probably
exactly.
took me a good five years before I felt okay, like where I felt like totally normal. And that was,
and that's
you
what
know,
I tell women, you know, I wish in that first year I could click my heels and you'd be past year one.
Year
but
one
even
is
when you get past
four.
Year one, near it's two, three, and four, there's a lot of residual scarring, I always say.
Yeah.
And you just, you know, trusting yourself is one thing, and then having trust with others is the next step. And
yeah.
loving yourself enough so that you won't keep making the same mistakes, you know, because I think after a while you lose your sense of self and self-esteem. And if you just jump into anything, you're going to find yourself making a mistake. I see this happening all the time. And that's why I tell
yeah.
my women, go out and practice. But, you know, your soulmate's not going to be there the minute you walk out of these marriages. You know, these guys, and there's a lot of predators out there. You've been in the dating world for a while. So I think you could attest to that, because I tell this to women all the time. You know, there are other kinds of predators out there waiting for vulnerable women who want to take advantage of them. Would you agree with that?
I'm sure it happens. I think I joke in the book that I never found myself as attractive to the opposite sex as when I first got out of that relationship. I don't know what kind of vibe I was sending off, but I think it was a vulnerable, emotionally distraught woman vibe, because
uh-huh.
I could walk through any room in any bar and there was 10 guys who were just like flies to honey. And now
uh-huh.
it's like no one talks to me ever. And I think that's actually an improvement, because I think I'm, you know, the water seeks its own level. And so it's like I'm not giving off that desperate vibe anymore. So a guy really has to have his stuff together for him to approach me. But, yeah, I mean, definitely when you first get out of a relationship and you're feeling vulnerable and you're not sure. You know, one of the hardest things for me was just being alone. I had you can be really independent, and I was. I mean, I traveled through Europe by myself. You know, I did not have helicopter parents. I was a very independent woman when I met my ex, but just the fact of living together for a certain amount of years with somebody, you lose that independence and you lose
mm-hmm.
that ability to be alone. And I would literally be like crawling the walls if I was alone for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what to do. I would just go to the nearest bar so I could be near people. That's how
bad
it was.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because so many of our women are also so afraid of being alone, so they stay in a bad situation. And I always tell women, you can be more alone living with somebody than you can on your own. You know,
there's
that,
nothing worse, I think, yeah, than being in a room with somebody you don't want to be in the room with. I mean,
or who doesn't want to be in the room with you.
Yeah, or both. I mean, that just seems really, yeah, I don't... I haven't really been in that situation, but I get out of things fairly early when I sense that kind of thing going on. But, you know, that was the hardest thing, just learning how to be alone again. It was like a physical process. It was like your brain chemistry isn't quite used to that yet. So it kind of goes ballistic when you're by yourself. So,
but you've learned how to
enjoy, I think you're
the
very vulnerable when you,
now, right?
What?
You've learned how to enjoy the peace and solitude now.
Absolutely. I mean, it's very enjoyable. I still, you know, I get lonely occasionally, but, you know, it's not like this craziness, like, you know, my skin crawling like it was. But, I mean, loneliness is just, it's not that bad to be lonely occasionally. I would rather be, you know, a little lonely than miserable.
Exactly. And that's what I
say. Or afraid or whatever, you know.
Well, Carrie, I can't thank you enough for coming back and being our guest tonight. And
thanks for having me.
I can't tell people to run fast enough when I hang up to Amazon.com and order this book. I mean, you're going to get so much out of this if you've gone through these kinds of relationships. And regardless of when you listen to this broadcast, because people listen, you know, not only live, but mostly, you know, during the week, no matter when you hear this, you must go and get this. It's called Can't Think Straight, A Memoir of Mixed Up Love. And it's just so beautifully written, and it's going to really validate every feeling that you've had as a woman who's gone through this. And you can live vicariously through some of Carrie's actions, I guess.
My
Even if you can't do it yourself, she did it for us now. But
yeah.
But you'll learn so much from this book about how your feelings and your emotions are so much in check, because we all go through this. We all may, you know, respond differently, but many of us respond the same exact way, and that's perfectly fine. You know, you have to go through what you have to go through to get where your next step's going to be.
Absolutely.
And you did it so beautifully, Carrie. Thank you so much for really making a difference in so many women's lives.
Well, thanks for having me, Bonnie, and so have you.
Well,
you've made
you.
Way more of a difference than I have.
Well, that's all right. You're just making a difference as we're going along, and you made a difference in my life, and that means a lot. I feel very validated after reading your book. So I'll be looking very much forward to meeting you in person this week.
Yes, I know.
I'm expecting that big hug.
Finally.
Like your Aunt Bonnie.
Yes.
But I'll look forward to that. And thank you again, Misty. Wasn't Carrie wonderful?
Absolutely. Thank you for being on here. Thank you for the book. It's
Misty, we didn't get to speak at all.
I know. I'm just sitting in the background. It's okay. Thank you
for Misty.
Bringing more awareness to the situation that so many people, you know, hear about sometimes and don't quite know the inside workings of what happens and the dynamics of the fallout, the trauma that comes to be when you experience.
You know, I don't mean to embarrass Misty right now, Carrie, while you're on the phone, but I don't really care. But on the thing, because Misty knows that she's up for this. But Misty, you know, was in an abusive marriage for 10 years, and
uh-huh.
she's been out of it, what, about 7 years now, Misty?
Oh, it's no. Let's see.
Longer?
Yeah, over 10 years.
Over 10 years she's been out of it. But it was not only emotionally abusive, it was physically abusive. So, you know, Misty really helps our women who have domestic violence issues.
Right.
But, you know, it was also abusive because, you know, she was married to a gay man who didn't want to touch her and told her all kinds of terrible things about herself.
Wait,
and
so he was gay, physically and physically abusive?
Yeah.
Yes, some of our men were.
Can be the least of the issues, so, yeah.
My God.
Yeah,
yeah,
awful.
Yeah. Terrible.
Horrible.
But now she found a wonderful man. And but it's taken you a while, right, Misty?
Absolutely. There was quite a few toads in between. and actually,
yeah.
I didn't date that much. I really didn't because, you know, I just, you know, when your crap-o-meter is going off early on, you don't go much farther. I know I didn't because I just, quite frankly, just wouldn't tolerate much. And so I didn't date very much in between, which many of our women don't like hearing that, but you know, I just got to the point of like I set my standards, and I'm saying, you know, I won't put up with this, and I won't put up with that again. I made myself
right.
promise my divorce, and well, with this guy, he followed through, and it's amazing. It really is, you know. And like you said, there were so many things that ring so true when a man looks at you the way a man should look at you that desires you. He will let you know. And it's just
yeah.
the most thing in the world. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. It's healthy. And he will let you know. And it's
yep.
it's one. It's absolutely wonderful experience.
Definitely.
Yeah, and that's why I say to women, when you tell me that your husbands or your boyfriends or whoever, you know, they're not that interested in sex, you know, I tell them, look, I'm 60 years old. I'll be 61 next month. And my boyfriend is 11 years older than I am. And we are very sexually still involved on a regular basis every week. And, you know, it's like not the only part of our relationship, but it sure is a great part of it. And that's how straight men are. And guess what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I say, I'm always 80 pounds overweight. He doesn't care. He thinks there's more of me to love. And he's very sexual. Now, I'm not saying every man is at that age, but trust me, if you're not sexual in your 30s or 40s, there is a problem.
There's a real problem. I mean, I hear about guys in their 20s. You know, I went and I spoke at a college, and one of the, you know, women said to me it was like a real problem with these younger couples who've been married for only a few years, and the guy wasn't interested in sex. And I'm like, what? Are you
right.
kidding me? That's a problem. That's
broken.
A serious
yeah.
problem.
And that's why I say it doesn't have to be gay, but any man who doesn't want to have sex
something
in their 20s
on,
or 30s,
you know,
there's something wrong with them, and you
something
don't stay with
wrong.
Them.
Yeah.
You don't have to spend a lifetime trying to fix a broken man, because you're never going to fix him. And that's my saying. You can't fix a broken man, but he can break you. And the more you keep trying to fix him, the worse you're going to feel about yourself when you can't do it. So women have to learn how to cut their losses and move on.
Absolutely.
Right?
And I loved that about your book, Bonnie, because so many books are about how to fix your marriage, how to fix your relationship, and women stack up on these books and, you know, spend the next 20 years reading them, and you're like, just, no, get out.
Right, cut your losses and move on.
Cut your losses.
Right. If a relationship's not working, and I work with a lot of straight couples, too, although that's not, you know, primarily my focus is, but I tell them the same thing. You know what? It doesn't mean there has to be a bad guy and a good guy. It's just outlived itself. Life, you know, people get married in their 20s. In their 40s, they want something else.
Right.
You know, you don't have to have a bad guy and a good guy. You know, be two good people that have just outgrown each other, and it's time to move on.
Right.
Find another soulmate and be happy. You have one chance at life. Grab it, I always say.
Yeah.
So, Carrie, once again, thank you so much. And it's Carrie Blakely, Can't Think Straight. Go to Amazon tonight, buy it. I'm going to, if you don't mind, I'll mention it again in my newsletter next month.
So that people can be reminded
to go and buy it. And I thank you so much. And we'll look forward to having you on again later in the year again.
Thank you, Bonnie. Thank you, Misty.
All right.
Thank you, Carrie.
Have a great night. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Misty?
Yes, I'm here.
You really need to buy this book, seriously speaking.
I know.
You know what I loved about it? And
what?
I'll tell this to all women. You know, we're all so vulnerable after these marriages and relationships.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And we all react in different ways. It's, you know, like mm-hmm. for me, I was celibate for 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for you, you weren't too much different for a long time.
Exactly. Yeah,
you know, and
for
I
a
was
long
just,
time.
Right. I mean, I had to wait until I could, you know, get past all this stuff. And it's true, you know, I had children to raise and everything else. But the last thing on my mind was, you know, running out and finding a new relationship. Because I didn't think that I'd ever be able to have a successful relationship after my marriage to my gay husband. I was so damaged. So mentally
ill. Yeah, I had to do so much healing. I mean, like I said a little earlier, and I've said on here before, him being gay was the least of most of our issues. And that was a huge issue to deal with. You know, I was fighting for my life on a daily basis once in time. And I had so much to deal with. I had so much baggage. I mean, I don't think the Titanic would help my baggage. So, you know, I was having to go. I didn't want to involve someone in my drama. And I knew I needed to take care of it myself. So, I mean, I chose to stay out. And I stepped back in. I tiptoed back in. And some people are different. Some people jump back in. You know, being a therapist, I'm a little leery of that. And I try to steer women against that, to jump back in very, very soon. You know, just be careful of that, because sometimes you'll repeat the same thing. But just make sure you know what you're doing. You know, make sure you know what you're doing. Make sure you know what your priorities are. Make sure you know what, you know, health-wise, what you're doing. And I think we forget to talk about that sometimes, or just so starved sexually, some of the women are. And
terrible.
So much.
Missy, we have a caller, so let's see what they have to say. Hold on a second. Hi, you're with Bonnie and Misty. Can I help you?
Hi, I think I might be one of those people you were talking about, the 25% that will just never know.
25%? I said 65%.
60. Okay. Well,
do you feel better now?
Not really.
Do you feel better? You're in a lot of company here?
Not really. No. I have been with this man for 12 years, been married for 10. I am about to file for divorce, and he still denies to this day that there's anything wrong. However, I don't have any Craigslist proof. I don't have any voice message proof. The only thing I've found from him is gay porn. And
That's proof because straight men do not watch gay porn.
Well, the first time I saw it was right after we got married, and he explained it away as a pop-up from a regular porn site. And I totally bought it, because back then there were no pop-up blockers. And I thought,
right.
Oh, obviously that's what happened. My bad. I'm so sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And then 4 years ago, there it is again everywhere. And he also likes to take nude pictures of himself. I don't know what he does with that.
He posts them on different places so he can have dates.
I don't know.
I'm sorry to tell you that, but, you know.
And, you know, we've gone to three different therapists, and they all mm-hmm. side with him. Even the one that supposedly was, you know, does that for a living, they're saying, no, he's not gay. He's just looking at porn, and that's okay.
No, it's not. So here's the deal. These people don't know what they're talking about. And
mm-hmm.
it's not healthy when men are looking at gay porn. How's your sex life?
Okay, that's the funny thing. It has always been, he's the one that wants it more. Always, always,
mm-hmm.
always. It, like Carrie said earlier, for most women, I think, after several years, the spark kind of wears off, and honestly, I really couldn't have cared less. He was always the one that pouted if he didn't get it, that, you know, 4 times, 5 times a week would have been great for him. So that's
mm-hmm.
kind of one part of it that I don't understand, really.
Well, there are a lot of men who are very sexually inclined, and they'll have sex with a woman because they want sex, but I've had gay men tell me, and they've been here on this show, that while they're having it, they're fantasizing about men.
Hmm.
You know, and that's how they get through the sexual act. And he could have a sexual addiction.
See, that's what he's saying, and that's what the therapist is saying, too. This could be more of a sexual addiction. It has nothing to do with gay. It's just that he'll watch anything.
Okay, so let me put it to you this way. You can call it whatever you want to call it, like I said before. I don't care if you call it asexual, bisexual, pansexual, sexual addiction. If a man wants a penis, it's gay to me. And that's the bottom line.
That's what I would think. It's just so hard to file when you have someone begging you and crying, and he's a nice man. Other than
mm-hmm.
this one thing, I haven't experienced a lot of, you know, I'm on like this Straight Stuff Network, and I read some of these stories, and I think, my gosh, I haven't experienced anything like that. He's a wonderful person. And, you know, he's saying to me, you're throwing this away because I have a problem with sex and you're not willing to work with me and the therapist. And that puts all the guilt on my shoulders, is what it does.
Exactly. He's very manipulative, too. And I have women who have the best husbands in the world. Like Kiri was just saying, she had a wonderful relationship with her boyfriend. He was a nice guy. And I have women who have had wonderful marriages, except, you know, these guys learn to compartmentalize themselves. And Misty, can you address that for a moment? Misty?
Yes, I'm here. I'm sorry.
Compartmentalization.
Yeah, that's very common. My ex was very guilty of doing that. Compartmentalization, how I define, is a lot of times, for some reason, when someone chooses to live a lifestyle, you know, they will live separate lifestyles and maintain different facades. And it's like one lifestyle is completely different when they get home. That's where their family is. When they're at work or on a business trip, that's a different lifestyle. They can easily tuck things in nice little containers. And men seem to be easier to do that than women, because oftentimes men do not involve as many emotions into a sexual act as a woman does. That's not always. Oftentimes that's the case. And it's very difficult as women for us to try to understand that sometimes, because oftentimes we put so much emotions into sex.
Right,
men
right.
often do that, and especially right. if you're dealing with someone that is gay, married to a straight woman, or someone that is possibly a sex addict. You know, it's just they're looking for sex, and oftentimes they're not looking for an emotional attachment. So it's so hard for us to try to wrap our head around. And you know, I think the bottom line is this something that you're happy with, or is it helping both of you grow in your relationship, or you know, is your relationship at a demise? You know,
yeah.
you know, therapy helping it, or is it hurting it, or is it moving nowhere?
I mean,
yeah,
it's been 4 years now with three different therapists, and it's moving absolutely nowhere. And, you know, like Carrie said too, if I would have been a snooper, I would have found this out a long, long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't, and I wasn't, and The even funnier part is when I did finally decide to snoop, I went to an old computer that we used to share right when we were first dating, and I went through his emails. There was just some old Outlook emails back in the day, and I'm looking for men, and then I thought, well, shoot, I should be reading everything. And what there were emails to a bunch of women about, let me send you some naked pictures. So, I mean, is there, maybe he is bi. I don't know.
No, it's a sexual addiction.
Yeah.
It's not bi. Now, how's your sex life with him now?
Oh, I have moved out. I moved out as of a few months ago, and I'm ready to file. Yeah.
How was it
last
year you were together?
I have refused to have sex with him since finding out, I shouldn't say for good. I found out basically three different times. The first time, like I said, I bought it. The second time, I flipped out, but I came back around. I believed the therapist who basically said, get over it. And sex was okay, but he's the one that really wanted it. I was kind of, it had worn off by 7 years in the relationship. But after the last time I found it, and then I found an order for a dildo, that was it. I said, no more sex. I'm completely done. And that was over 2 years ago.
No, here's the thing, and I'm sorry, I don't know your name, so I can't address you. But the thing is that...
I can tell you.
Go ahead.
It's Tammy.
Tammy?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so what I wanted to tell you, Tammy, is this. Everything comes down to what can you live with. And I never judge what a person can live with or can't live with. But I don't want to be in a relationship with a man who needs stimulation from other people to make love to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's that simple. And if a man needs to be stimulated by another man in order to be, make love to me, I don't want that. If he has to be stimulated by other women, I don't want that. I want a man to love me enough that I'm enough stimulation for him that he doesn't have to be spending his life looking to have sex with other people or sending pictures of his penis to other people. That's way outside the realm of normalcy to me.
Yeah. And granted, that was before we were married, those emails I found. But... I don't have any proof of any cheating during the marriage or anything like that, so...
But you have proof of the porn, right?
Sure, yes, absolutely.
Right, and the fact that a man is looking at gay porno, you go ask your other straight male friends that you know and ask them if they would ever do that. They'll look at you like you're crazy.
Yeah, they do.
And you know what? These guys know how to compartmentalize so well, like Misty says, to the point where in their own minds they think they're normal, they're normal straight men who just have a few little idiosyncrasies.
That's exactly what he called it. It's a quirk. It's a personality quirk.
Right,
Right. I'm gray and you're just black and white.
Mm-hmm. And you guess what? That's fine. You can be black and white, Tammy, because you're the one who has to live with it.
Yeah.
And what if he is doing something out there? I mean, we have women whose husbands swear to them they've never had sex with anybody else, that, there's nobody else in the world that they have to sit and worry about, and yet they come home with sexually transmitted diseases, and then their husbands say, I don't know how you got that. It's not from me. Okay, well, you're a sex addict, and you're out there screwing around with people, and I now have a disease, and I haven't screwed anybody. It's not you. I mean, these guys just lie so much, and they lie to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them who won't admit it is because they can't even admit that word to themselves. And I say that maybe some woman doesn't mind living with it, and that's fine, but you never have to feel guilty for one second because you're not that woman. Because I could never do it. I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to. That's not what my life is about. I can't live in somebody else's, sexual fantasies. Not living in it, but just living alongside of it. And it is a quirk, and it is a fetish. And, in fact, in my book, Man Readers, A Woman's Guide to Dysfunctional Men, I write a lot about these guys who are sex addicts. So, trust me, you don't have to feel bad for a minute that you don't want to live with this. It's just like there's a group of women that are married to guys who dress up, who are, cross-dressers.
Uh-huh.
And they don't mind at all. I personally could not live with it. I don't want a man who's walking around in dresses and stockings. And like I say, maybe it is just a fetish, and maybe it is just, you know, quirk. But that doesn't mean I want to live with it, and I'm going to be comfortable with it. I don't want to share my clothes with a man.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not to me. And they could be wonderful guys. I'm not judging them. It's just a matter of what can I live with, and I don't want to live with that. Would you?
Mm-hmm. No, but I just, it, being gay seems like such a common thing now. I don't know why these people feel like they need to hide it. That's what I don't understand.
Well, that's because they can't accept it. You know, they're trying not to be gay. They don't want to be gay. Because even though it's much more out today, it's still not acceptable. You know, if you're gay, you're still discriminated against. And that's why, you know, I'm very much for in favor of gay rights. And so gay people can feel like they're accepted by society for themselves, then they're going to keep doing these things.
Right.
You know, trying
right.
not to be gay. And I understand it. And believe me, my heart goes out to them. But you can't bring in an innocent person into your life when you know that there's something wrong and expect that they can fix that for you, because they can't. And I'm sure you're a wonderful wife, am I right?
I hope so. I thought I was.
I mean, I'm sure you did everything right, that you tried to make a good, you know, house. You have children?
No.
Okay. So you don't have to have any long-term entanglements after this is over.
No.
Which is the best thing. You can walk away and start fresh. But I don't want any of your thinking to get screwed up and thinking that you've done something wrong, or you're not trying hard enough, or you're the one who's giving up on a wonderful marriage just because of a little problem.
That's
this
exactly
isn't a little problem.
Think.
This is a big problem. Wouldn't you say so, Misty?
Absolutely. It's a huge problem. A healthy sexual relationship is very, very important in a marriage. It's very important. It's sacred to many couples, because that's a, when you take vows, most couples consider their vows sacred. And that's a very important part of a healthy relationship. When once you marry someone and you're with someone, someone is defining that much different than you are. It's a deal breaker for most people. I know it is for me. I can't tell you what it is for you, but I know it is for me. And another thing that really strikes me is, you know, you say you were to three different therapists. You know, I professionally, I'm a therapist, and it bothers me when therapists try to be an expert over someone's loss. You know, and tell you to get over it, or tell you this. But, you know, you're your own expert of your life. A therapist should be there to help guide you of what you want and what you need, and help you discover what's best for you. And I would highly suggest find a therapist that will do that for you. You know, help guide you through that and help you discover what your goals are in life. And if he doesn't meet those goals, you know, let that therapist help you find ways to get through that. Or if he does meet your goals, you know, find ways to work through it. But it sounds like, you know, there are several issues, and a healthy sex life is very important. It's not a small problem. Very important.
Tammy, don't feel bad, right, Misty?
No. Don't, no, this isn't your fault. This is not your fault. Absolutely.
Right.
And I know. I know it's not. I do read how a lot of women are just so upset over it, and you know, they feel like it's their fault. I definitely know it's not, but I almost wish he were a mean person or a bad person, so I would feel like I would have some right to get mad and say, screw you, I'm done with this, instead of him just sitting there crying, saying, you
it's
know.
It's emotional manipulation, though, Tammy. These guys who
do that. He just doesn't seem like he would do that.
Yeah, they're experts at doing that. They want to try to make you feel bad because they have a problem. You're abandoning them. That's how they emotionally manipulate you. And are you on my newsletter list, Tammy?
Uh-huh.
Do you get my newsletter?
Or am I? No, I do not. Uh-uh.
Well, if you write to me at bonk@aol.com, I'll send you plenty of information, including profiles of men who emotionally manipulate you, and you'll see him right in there.
Really? Okay.
Because you're a good, loving person, no doubt, because that's the profile of the kind of woman these guys look for. You know, you always feel bad. You always feel, well, maybe you could fix it. And these are problems beyond our fixing. And if some other woman wants to sit and spend her life trying to fix them, let her do it, but you don't have to. You owe yourself more than this. You need to be happy. How old are you?
39, about to be 40.
All right. Well, believe it or not, you're still a babe next to me anyway. So you still have plenty of time to meet somebody who could treat you the way you deserve to be treated. You know, like, and on my mantra, on my website, in case you didn't see it, is life is never meant to be this complicated. It's
no,
not.
I just found out about you from someone on the Straight Spouse Network. So I logged on tonight and I said I'm going to listen to this show. So.
Oh, okay, good. Well, you can write to me. You can go to my website at gayhusbands.com. And I have a lot of information there. And if you want my newsletter, there's some sample ones. Or you can just, you know, drop me a line. And I'm more than happy to, you know, send you all this information. The important
okay.
thing is that this is your life, and no one has the right to tell you what you're doing wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry that
no,
you got screwed up by these therapists who are giving you bad advice.
Yeah, there's a lot out there that do. Yeah.
Let them go live with your husband.
Don't know much about the situation, and unfortunately, they assume when people are curious that it's not a deviation of what of something normal, and it's really sad because it holds a lot of relationships together because women keep trying harder and harder and harder
right.
and harder to make things work, try to make something work that's possibly broken. And I'm not telling you what to do, but just, you know, just make sure you get lots of good support, friends.
Excuse me, Misty won't tell you what to do, but I will. Stay out of that relationship.
Bonnie will tell you.
Yeah.
More
I'm the first to tell you, get out, stay out, put it behind you, start
well,
rebuilding
you know,
your life, you know, start getting support. We have online support twice a week online here. You can read about that, too.
Okay.
What area do you live in?
In Texas.
Okay, we have some wonderful women in Texas, so if you write to me, I'll be happy to hook you up with them. And, you know, the important thing is for you to move ahead and put this nightmare behind you. You know, the
yeah.
problem is there are some very nice guys, and as Carrie was saying in her story, it was so hard for her to accept this because she was married to one of them. And a lot,
right.
you know, there's a number of our women who have really good husbands who are very kind and good to them.
Right.
But it doesn't change the bottom line, does it?
No, it doesn't. I just have such a hard time believing he could be manipulative. He is the sweetest, shyest. I don't see it in him, and neither does anyone else.
Well, let me ask you this question: did he ever tell you what he was doing, or did you
no.
have to find that out yourself?
Yeah, I had to find that out.
So he wasn't being real honest, was he?
No.
Exactly.
Mm-mm.
So no matter how sweet and wonderful he is, and that's very possible that he is, there's this other side of him that's ingrained in him. It is him that,
yeah.
you know, you're not familiar with. And that's the dangerous side that would drag you right down with him.
Mm-hmm.
Does he come from a religious background at all?
Well, that's the funny thing. His parents are religious. However, they switch churches because their church, their original church, would not accept gay and lesbians. They are very pro-gay lesbian.
I wonder why.
I don't know.
That's interesting.
Isn't it, though?
That's very interesting.
And isn't that strange
that era,
people are leaving churches that are pro-gay?
Yeah. They're late 70s, early 80s.
Wow.
Yeah, but they must know that their son is gay.
I don't
well,
know.
It may be in the family somewhere. You
mm-hmm.
know,
his father might be gay.
Or
his
know.
Mother. You know, gay
his,
just doesn't run on its own. It's a genetic predisposition that is genetically passed on. And
yeah.
I always tell women, look in that family, you're going to find it.
I think
you know,
his
maybe
sister
a generation
looks like,
or two back, but does he have any gay relatives?
His sister looks like she could be, although she's been married for 25 years.
Yeah, well, as we know in this group, that doesn't mean anything.
I was married.
He had
no other uncles, aunts that you know of?
No, I don't really know them, though. They're kind of all over
mm-hmm.
the place. He has a daughter from a previous marriage who I would probably say is going to be.
Mm-hmm. That's why I say it's not a choice. Being honest about it is a choice. Being born gay is not a choice.
Yeah.
But some people
well,
just
you know,
can't accept the fact that they're gay, so they're going to come up with every excuse in the world.
The
and I don't
thing
even
is,
know if he's looking at these girls for real or just trying to throw himself off. by thinking if I do, you know, send these pictures to women, then I can't be gay. You know, you just don't know. I have gay men who have told me that the porno that they watch is straight porno. They don't watch gay porno. The only thing that turns them on is straight porno. So I said, and I asked them all. There's been like 7 guys who have told me this over the years. I said, what turns you on about straight porno? They said, watching the man have sex with the woman, and they fantasize themselves as the women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they fantasize that they're her, and he's doing that to them. So you just never know what goes on in the quirky minds of men who are quirky. I guess But
I
the bottom line is that, you know, at least you know that it's not you. You don't have to feel bad that you had anything to do this. You didn't cause it. You can't change it. You can't fix it. You didn't break it.
No. Mm-mm.
But you can't fix it up, and you really have to now just fix up yourself, because how long have you been with him?
Going on 12 years next month.
Yep, that's a long time. Now you're going to have to readjust everything again. How are you making out since you broke up?
Oh, I'm fine. I am one that likes to be on my own. We were, you know, 30. I was 30 when we got married. I was perfectly happy living on my own. I'm perfectly happy now. He traveled quite a bit for work, so I was used to that, and I enjoy my time, and I'm good.
And I'm sure he's enjoying his time, and he was traveling, too.
Probably.
So we always tell women that's the first sign when you have a husband that travels.
Yeah.
Trouble.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't have a choice. He's a pilot.
I'm sure he doesn't mind. Trust me, these guys, to get these traveling jobs, they don't want to stay home. They want to be on the move. And I bet, you know, like I say, if you had more time, maybe you could have found more evidence. But what's the difference? You know what you need to do. You know what you want. You know you want to be happy. And you know you're not going to be happy with a sex addict. Because they very rarely ever get better. It's like any other addiction. It's like drug addiction, alcoholism, food. You know, I'm a food addict. I admit it. I'm never going to really probably be better. You know, I've been like this since I'm 3. But, you know, it's a little late for me to change, although I fight it every day, but I'm still heavy and overweight. But my point is that when it comes to sex addiction, these guys don't even want to give it up because they like it. So the success of recovery for a sexual addiction is like at virtually zero. So that means you can stay in there forever and it's still not going to change. So what's the point?
That's interesting.
Just so you give yourself at having a good life, meaning your soulmate out there.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that they're never going to give it up, because that's what the last therapist said. I actually had high hopes for her. She specializes in this, and when she met with me and I told her the whole story, she said, absolutely, I think he's gay. I'm going to be there to help him come out. And I said, great. And then she had about 5 or 6 sessions with him, and she said, nope, I don't think he's gay right now, but I don't think he'll ever stop looking at it. He can't stop looking at it, but he's not gay. So if you want to work on it, we can work on it. And I thought, well, how does that even make sense?
It doesn't.
Yeah.
And once again, if he has a sexual addiction, okay, I say that there are guys who have that. They're not necessarily gay, but they'll have gay sex because it's an addiction, so they don't really care. They'll go with anything, man, woman, or otherwise, so it doesn't really matter what they go with. So don't let that be your guide. You have to do what makes you happy and what feels right for you. And that's the only thing that counts. Don't let anybody make you feel bad, guilty, oh, you're giving up. Don't let him emotionally manipulate you, and please write to me so I can send you all those articles on emotional manipulation, which I'm happy to do.
Thank you.
When I come to Texas, what part are you in?
San Antonio.
Oh, okay. We have some wonderful women in that area, so keep in touch with me, okay?
Okay, I will. I thank you very much.
All right, thanks for calling in.
All right, have
a great...
y'all.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Well,
Misty,
it's time for us to be ending in a few seconds. I just want to tell everybody and remind them again, we won't be on next week. I'll be away traveling to Bermuda.
Nice. Enjoy.
There's no storms coming up the way, so I can get to Bermuda this year. I missed it last year, but that's okay. I'm trying again. So anyway, love to all of you, and I'll be back in 2 weeks with Misty. And I love you, Misty.
I love you. Good night and love to all. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.